Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking. And the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
Tires matter. They're the only part of your vehicle that touches the road. Tread confidently with new tires from Tire Rack. Whether you're looking for expert recommendations or know exactly what you want, Tire Rack makes it easy. Fast, free shipping, free road hazard protection, and convenient installation options. Go to TireRack.com to see tire test results, tire ratings, and consumer reviews, and be sure to check out all the special offers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Welcome to Maximize Your Hunt, the podcast dedicated to those who want the most out of their hunting property. This podcast explores land management, habitat improvement, and hunting strategies that will help you maximize your time in the field. Follow along as industry professionals that live and breathe white-tailed deer share their secrets to success. And now, the founder of Whitetail Landscapes, your host, John Teeter.
Hi, I'm John Teeter, Whitetail Landscapes. This is Maximize Your Hunt. Welcome back, everybody. I am going to get right into the topic today. I'm busy, so we're going to get going here. I've got Rocky Burris back from SA Farm Management. We're going to talk box blinds today, topic that we haven't talked about in too much detail, but Rocky and I are going to get into some of the details. I'm going to actually have a part two on this as well. I'm going to talk to another person I'm going to bring on the podcast, but for now, we're going to get into some of the details with Rocky. Hey, Rocky, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Great. You sent me a plethora of pictures yesterday, and you really fired me up for deer season. So I appreciate you sending me all those good bucks you got on camera.
Yeah, that's what I'm good for, I guess, getting everybody fired up.
Well, your season's not far away, right? I mean, is winter velvet season?
We got 10 days. It's not this, next weekend. So okay, it's about to get on us.
Yeah, so you're close to velvet season, so that amped me up pretty good. So I'm excited for you and looking forward to see what happens this season with you. So yeah, Let's get into the topic, box blinds. And I want to start this off with, you know, everybody has their opinion on box blinds. You know, what product is better than another product, et cetera. And I'm not really going to go there. I'm just going to, you know, talk about my experience, and Rocky will talk about his experience. I think box blinds have their a purpose on the landscape, particularly in field settings. They tend to be, you know, a better option than tripods or, you know, other options that, that people kind of self-create. I like my own box blind systems that I have, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But Rocky, you build box blinds, and, you know, I think it's important to discuss kind of how you build them, and you build them for your specific area. You have a lot of heat, and I think it's important that people, you know, think about that on the landscape. So why don't we talk a little bit about the box blinds you build yourself?
Yeah, well, I guess that we've built blinds a couple different ways in the years. So now we're offering basically metal exterior blinds that are wrapped with insulation, just like you would a shop in this area, a pole barn. A lot of people build shops and pole barns, and you know, they heat and cool them and everything just like a house, and it's a big thing right now. So what we've kind of created is this box blind that's got Lexan windows and gaskets on it, just like you would on a house or a door, you know, your door gaskets and stuff, and wrapped all of it in metal and didn't stop the joints in the corners. We actually crimped the metal in the corners so that it's a continuous lapping effect, and it just really creates an airtight design. And you know, that's pretty much the reason I believe the most in box blinds, is because, you know, the ability to contain your scent, and trying to, nothing's 100%, but I mean, you can really, really, you can, if there's any time in the world that you can fool a deer's nose, it's when you have all the windows shut and they're all airtight, and you got that blind closed up, and there's a good chance you can get away with something when you have that set up, versus, in my opinion, then if you're just sitting in a, you know, a box stand or that has no windows and, you know, something like that, where, you know, you're still having to pay attention to the wind a whole lot. So, I mean, that's a big reason I'm believing, you know, in box stands. And it's just kind of, you know, the protection, the 360 degree view, the sound dampening effect of it, you're less visible, you know, it conceals your movement, makes your scent control contained, you know, that's the biggest thing for me. And then you can be very comfortable. That's a huge thing. You can sit in an office chair and watch all your deer. It's great for your kids. I mean, if you got kids, you got to have a way for them to get out and enjoy the outdoors with you. And the boxes is where I always run to with them, because they want to play and they want to eat snacks. And, you know, and I still don't want to educate any of the deer. So we go to the box stands and have a ball, and we can whisper and talk, and, you know, all your sounds pretty much contained inside there. So it's a lot safer too. You know, you can get your kids up in those boxes and sit in chairs, and, you know, just the stairway effect is only, you know, bit of chance for them to get hurt. I mean, once they're in there, it's just like a house. So
yeah,
that's why I like it.
Yeah. And everything, I echo everything you said, and I agree with you 100%. The one thing I want to get into your box blind is really twofold. One, nothing's really truly airtight, right? We can make that's a fact, but you need to have airflow in the box blind. Otherwise you get condensation buildup, et cetera. You know, you don't want to walk into kind of a very moist area. The other thing I wanted to talk about within your box blinds is you insulate them as well. And, you know, what is the benefit of insulating a blind in your scenario? And do you think that helps you out during the cooler periods when you're trying to, you know, I know that you've put air conditioners in box blinds. So, you know, I want to just kind of discuss that in a little bit of detail from your experience.
Well, I mean, the air conditioner in the box blind, we've done that just on a couple little occasions, and it's for that velvet hunt that's in 10 days. I mean, that's extreme conditions hunt, and it's very few people that want the air condition. Most of us just go sit in the sweat box and hunt it out and lose some weight while we're doing it. But I really think the insulation part is, you know, of course it helps when you have these metal blinds. I mean, I've built treated plywood blinds and T111 and different things that you would build like shops that are wood exteriors. I've been a contractor for 24 years, log home and timber frame specialist. So, I mean, the construction side of the world, I've studied it and know it pretty well. And I know a lot of these barns and shops and stuff, when we're not wrapping them in metal, we're using like T111 and stuff like that. This is a little bit cheaper plywood, but you can really paint it. We paint those exteriors with like they make a rubberized deck paint, and I'll use that on the exterior of them just to get the longevity of it. I mean, just the treated wood in itself would probably last you 15, 20 years. But with that on it too, it really, you know, it really boosts your longevity of the blind, and the strength of it is with plywood's pretty strong. So they're just heavy, you know, and we doing the metal now. I feel like every little, if you bumped a wall or you did anything like that, it would be just a little too much noise. So we were wrapping them in insulation more for the sound dampening effect. And, if you were to drop something against the wall or something like that, it wouldn't make a big metal noise. And, of course it's going to help, you know, if you were to run a heater and stuff inside, I mean, it's going to help contain that heat. And it helps, you know, those things are really waterproof. The wrapping, is a moisture barrier. So, I mean, that in itself really helps contain your scent also.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize those propane heaters put out so much moisture. A lot of that's your fogging up and stuff. You know, if you went to like a wood stove or something like that in these blinds, you would almost eliminate your scent through that, because it'd be drawing your scent through the burn. But at the same time, you won't have any fog issues and stuff like people that hunt those extreme cold areas. They even put wood burner blind in their blinds and stuff. So
yeah.
Just something to think about.
So insulation wise, what do you typically use? And you said you wrap it. So what exactly does that look like?
So, I mean, if you're accustomed to a pole barn, and when I say pole barn, it's like you put 4x4s in the ground and you frame it up with 2x6s, put girts on it, and then you wrap it in metal. And most of those are insulated. They have a wrapping that they put on the framing of a barn or a shop before they put the metal on. And that's a moisture barrier, because your metal always sweats. And no matter, you know, your temperatures fluctuate and your metal is going to sweat. So it keeps all the dripping. There's no water dripping on your head. There's no water on your walls and stuff. It's all separated with that insulation. I see a lot of people that don't necessarily do the insulation. And, when you turn a heat on or anything inside the blind and it's cold outside, you're going to get stuff dripping on your clothes and on you and on your equipment. So we just wrap it for the purpose of it containing our scent a little bit, containing the heat a little bit, and then also keeping the moisture out.
So. Yeah, that's good. I've seen a couple different things. I've seen people where they've taken metal enclosures, built similar to what you're talking about, actually done open cell spray foam directly to metal. That's one way to do it. I don't think that's the best idea. I've seen them put, you know, a material in between, you know, the metal and the framing, like a wood barrier, a membrane, essentially, and various options. You could use Texture 111, whatever the case may be, and then apply, you know, some foam. I've seen just different things. Now I've gone an opposite route, and I think it's for convenience of time. And one thing I want to hit on earlier that you talked about was, I call it Cadillac hunting. My old career, you know, up until 5 years ago, I wouldn't touch a box blind. And you know, you get into these situations where you have these field settings and you're trying to create concealment. In your case, my case, we have kids. We want to introduce them in the outdoors and we want to do it in kind of fun way. And space is something that, you know, we're conscious of. I can't have a 5x4 blind. It's got to be a 6x6 blind, you know, size-wise, just for space, et cetera. But the one thing that I get into and I found, you know, advantaging to me is getting into these kind of plastic or polyethylene type blinds. And I've really kind of enjoyed, you know, the first blind I bought was 5 years ago. And I was doing this with my clients. I was getting in blinds, distributing them. I'm only doing that now through another group. And, you know, I have somebody does the installs for me. But what I found was these polyethylene blinds to me, you know, were something that I could buy. I didn't have to screw around with, you know, building. It was a time thing. And, you know, I found them to be pretty, I want to say rugged. And the reason I say that is, you know, I didn't have, you know, I guess I didn't have a lot of money 5 years ago. And I don't know if I have that much money now, but, you know, everything I was doing was kind of on a budget and I would have to take my blind. I remember, you know, I didn't even have a nice vehicle to drive. And I rolled the blind. I had it in a trailer and I pulled it around with a car, right? This is how I got to my spots. And I rolled the blind up to my hunting spot. You know, I just rolled it. You know, it was a circle and I just rolled it. That was a Banks blind. I think it was a Stump 4. And, you know, I levered it up and it got it up in the air and I, you know, screwed around with it and got it set up and it had the 4x4 mounting legs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, in that process and enjoying that blind, I really was like, wow, this is like the cat's meow. I've been, you know, struggling for years and years being out in the cold and it's, you know, we get over 100 inches of snow here. It's constantly wet and rainy, a lot of moisture in there all the time. Just, it makes the hunting hard and it makes in a scenario like a big field setting, it allows you to hunt a field a lot easier. And, you know, you're building your structure around this blind, your screening, you know, your fencing options where you're limiting movement. It's all kind of structured around this blind scenario. And, you know, that's your infrastructure, your base. But having that polyethylene blind was a game changer for me. That was a Banks blind Stump 4. And, you know, I've got some tales of things that I don't like about that blind either, but you know, that was my introduction to blinds. I had not hunted them for years and years. I've hunted out some, you know, old, you know, dilapidated boxes that somebody, you know, put up in a tree. I've hunted out of crates. I mean the whole nine, but having one of those, it was a game changer for me. I know that, you know, some people will say, well, metal's going to have, you know, longevity. I can't disagree with you. It's going to. And to Rocky's point earlier, you know, you can do stuff to wood, you know, his example, rubberizing it, where you're going to get that longevity out of it. Some of the smart wood, you know, it's warranted for 30 years. So, you know, there's some product that's going to last some period of time. Can I say a fiberglass blind is going to outlast one of those? Possibly. How about a polyethylene? Possibly. But the one thing I want to bring back to is that blind, that Banks blind, and I'm not promoting Banks because I have got a Grizzly and a Titan also on my property. But the fact is I've dropped those. I've had them roll down hills. I've smashed them. I've run into them with tractors. I've abused these products, you know, learning how to install and set up, right? Just telling you being vulnerable. And I've really, you know, they've survived pretty much everything in that I've thrown at them. And it just kind of says kind of a lot about that design and shape and, you know, they're lightweight, et cetera, and they're easy to set up. And I want to go back to your blinds real quick, because one thing I have noticed on your blinds, I've paid attention to a lot of your stuff, is you have them set up where they have 4x4s already elevating the blinds so you can get a set of forks underneath them. And then you also, I think you sell them with brackets as well, so you can elevate them even higher, you know, just a few feet off the ground versus, you know, 8 or 9 feet off the ground, whatever the case may be. Can you kind of explain your setups and things that you're doing on your blinds?
Yeah, I mean, I like all the blinds. I mean, they all have a place, like you were talking. I mean, I've had manufactured blinds that I sold last year that were sportsman blinds, and what I run into out in our area it's basically people are price shopping, you know, and when you get a blind that's like ours, that's, you know, I can sell one of the painted ones for $1,700 and I can sell one of the other ones for 2000. Well, when you got people having to go and get a redneck and it's going to cost them $3,000, and then they realize there's another $2,000 for the platform if you want to raise it.
Yeah.
And then it's, so then they're like, whoa, that's a lot. So way I look at it is I tried to basically manufacture a blind that is as affordable and longevity, like it should last you for years and years and years. I try to make it as cheap as I can, but as functional. Like, I don't want to be cheap and junk. I would rather be cheap and the perfect amount of space. I mean, we play with every, you know, every size, and I'm with you. I think the 6x6 is a great size because it's not so you can hunt it by yourself and see everything, but then you could also have you, your wife, and two kids in there if you wanted to. So it's not too big and it's not too small. But, you know, my blinds, as far as elevating them and stuff, you know, we do have the elevator brackets in the corners, and that's just a way that, you know, the average man that doesn't have a lot of building construction knowledge, I mean, all you have to do is slide 4x4s in that, in those holes, run a lag in it, and X-brace it, and you're ready. So it's just a quick way, and I kind of went to that that setup after selling the Sportsman blinds, because they come equipped with like a metal frame and those in the corners, and they sell like hotcakes in our area. I mean, they sell for about the same price as what I'm selling mine for. I just feel like they're a little bit less durable. I mean, they're plastic drums. They sweat. They, if you bump the wall, it sounds like you're banging a drum. And, there's no added insulation. They're just all plastic forms. And, you know, it's just, we had some straight line winds and tornadoes come buzzing through and knock out a bunch of clients' boxes and stuff. Some Amish builds and some Sportsman blinds and stuff like that. And they, you know, almost everybody's blind was irreplaceable. I mean, I told them they couldn't afford me to do it. You might as well just buy one of my blinds. Because I mean, the Amish blinds were made out of one by material. And when they hit the ground, it just torqued the whole blind to the point where it looked like a leaning tower. I mean, the windows were all diamond shaped almost. I mean, it was just horrible. So you would have had to tear that blind completely down, pull all the nails and rebuild it. I mean, there's no way that somebody would want to pay me to do that. I mean, that's something they could do maybe, but there's no way I would do it. I'd just sell you a blind. But, you know, with the Sportsman blind, we had one fall on our place, and, you know, it was anchored and everything properly, and it fell, and it shattered almost all the windows, because they're just plexiglass. They're not like Lexan, like what we're using. It's a lot thicker, and ours has a frame. These are just a wind, like a little sheet of plexiglass. So when it hit the ground, they shattered, and then the form in itself busted on the roof and on the wall. So, I mean, I don't have a way to reform rubber or plastic, you know? So, I mean, there's no way I can really repair that thing without it just looking horrible. So, you know, where if it was construction build blind or something like that, that was built with 2x4s and 4x4 corners like ours. I mean, if it falls, you're going to maybe replace a couple sheets of metal if you don't want to see it dented, and then it's going to be back working.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's just the durability, you know, and freaks of nature stuff. Cause I mean, we do run into it a lot. They're a lot cheaper. You can add things to the interior of them pretty easy because it's all wood, so you can screw stuff to it, little holders and cup holders, add shelves to it, lights, and you know what I mean? And where if it's just a manufactured blind, it's going to be pretty intense. You're going to have to figure out how to glue stuff to walls or whatever, or you're going to have screws sticking out of your blind, you know. Then you got, you know, just normal tools to install all that stuff. And walls don't really you know, the metal walls, I just don't feel like they can, they're not going to deteriorate and get brittle like a fiberglass blind, you know, in 15, 20 years, that metal, you know, that fiberglass is going to fade real bad and get brittle. And, you know, if a limb falls on it, it's going to shatter it. And then how do you fix fiberglass? I mean, nobody's, we're not all that kind of person sitting around. So the floors are a little quieter, you know, being plywood floors and stuff versus, you know, the fiberglass floors that are kind of, some of them even make noise when you're walking in and out of them and stuff. So I just, you know, there's good and bad of all these blinds, you know, just you have to kind of evaluate what you're after. And it's kind of like a trail camera. I'm always trying to find the best cheap camera. So, and cause I can put more fingerprints out there and figure out where my deer are. And the same way with farms, like if you have 10 blinds that you would love to have on the property, but you can't afford, but two of the real nice blinds. Well, what if you found a blind that you could get all 10 for that same money? That's where I'm at. If it's still the same function and it's a little cheaper, but it's not manufactured and got a brand stamped on it, then that's where I try to build that for people that are like me. So
yeah, and I think a lot of good information there. I'm gonna go back to the polyethylene blinds and I'll talk about the fiberglass blinds. I've stayed away from Redneck, and that's not a knock on Redneck or anything, but I've always been concerned, you know, being familiar with fiberglass boats, knowing how that resin degrades over time. But polyethylene, you know, the same kind of thing. It's got resins in it that are stabilizers, essentially. And if you read, like, Titan blinds, and I've got one of those now on my property, you know, Banks blinds, some of these other blind manufacturers, you know, they talk about, you know, UV stabilize, and all those are resins that they impregnate into the thermoplastics. And essentially, it creates bonding. And that bonding eventually breaks down. It's only going to last for such a period of time. Now, I'm not going to mention it on this podcast, but there are, you know, roll-on type material that you can add to these plastics that adhere to it. They got to be on friction surfaces, so they can't be completely smooth. And that will, like, a good idea is to put it on your roofs. Like, if you have a Banks blind or, you know, like the example, the Titan blinds or a Grizzly blind or something along those lines, you can put that, you know, material on top, roll it on top. And if you're interested in what that material is, you can contact me because I don't want to say it on the podcast. I don't want to promote some companies that you know, I think that don't participate in this market. Regardless, is there's options to protect your blind. It's also filling in holes. Now, there's other things I want to talk about, and I think this is really important. So over the years in the blinds, my experience is I've had water intrusion in every single blind. That's Grizzly, Banks, and, well, Titan's a new one, but I just recently had a little bit of leakage. And a lot of it's just the tightness of the, you know, the window, you know, whether it's a polycarbonate window or a Lexicon window, whatever the window is, that and the gaskets. The gaskets absolutely degrade over time. So we'll be replacing those at some point or other. So you have to look at the replaceability factor. The other thing is the tightness between, you know, the windowsill. And also look at the way the sills kind of roll. These aren't like traditional windows, you know, where there's, you know, a typical sill that's got a degrading slope, right? The water hits it. A lot of times they sit in a pocket. So if you want to do a test on a blind, and if people really, you know, think this would be, well, we've talked about doing this years and years ago for a hunting magazine. I was contacted by a box blind company to do some testing, and we had come up with all these, you know, basically water intrusion tests. And it was kind of a neat concept where basically you're soaking a blind and finding its, you know, its weak areas. But what you'll find over time is these blinds all have weak areas. They all have gasket issues. They eventually will degrade in some capacity. I don't have experience with the 360 blinds, or there's another company called NextGen out of Pennsylvania. I got a client who's a distributor to them, and I don't know how well they hold up to weather, et cetera. But, you know, they're basically a paneled blind. I've not been a fan of panel blinds. I love the 360 views, but when it comes to like one solid unit, I'm more of preferential to the one solid unit, assuming you're doing some maintenance like I talked about earlier. But I think to each their own in these topics. I just recognize that nothing is going to last permanently. You know, if you get 15 years and you do the ROI in 15 years, you pay $3,000. Is that worth it to you? I think those are the questions that you need to ask yourself. I would not put these blinds at last seen over 25 years in any capacity. They just won't last based on the weather, you know, depending if you're in extreme heat. I mean, just recognize this. Steel degrades, you know, metal degrades with UV, right? I mean, if you think metal isn't going to, you know, metal degrades, imagine how plastic degrades over time. It does. Think about your, you know, your local playgrounds. A lot of them are plastic materials that degrade over time. You know, just something to kind of put out there. And maybe they're not even the thickness of the particular box blinds that we're talking about as well. So I don't know, Rocky, you kind of want to add to the conversation just from my experience. But the water intrusion test is, you know, go up. Maybe a dealer will let you do this. Take a, you know, a water hose and just start shooting the blind, at, you know, with a water hose and see if there's any water intrusion. That to me would be a great test. That should be a blind that's brand new. It's getting a high level of water. You know, you're kind of, I guess, replicating a storm, and it's hitting it at and maybe extreme angle, you know, right on the face of the box blind, and shoot in the window, see if water goes in the blind. I mean, that to me is problematic long term. So, you know, those things are things that are important. And the other thing Rocky mentioned earlier is just noise. You know, I've got blinds where, you know, the armature of the door handle makes a bunch of noise. And, you know, I don't want a big amount of noise when I open a blind or close a blind, even just shutting the door, you know, and having
those gaskets too. Yeah. I mean, the gaskets are horrible when it gets to sitting there for however long you haven't hunted. And then when you go to try to open the window is stuck to that gasket, especially during frozen time. You know what I mean? Yes. Like you got to pop them off that gasket. So that's why I went with attaching the gasket to the actual window. So literally when you pull the window tight, it, you know, the gasket comes off the wood. So, I mean, that's a pretty good way to get away from that. But I mean, but those are huge things that I knew, like the rednecks, they're the same thing. Like, and where can you buy that gasket? You got to go to their company and buy like this expensive gasket to replace it.
Right.
You know, and wrote, where you could go to Lowe's and buy the cheapest one that, you know, you want to put on it if you had to replace the one that we do. So, I mean, it's just, I guess it's, you know, like you were saying, it's totally, there's all kinds of little things to think about. And maybe that's a good reason for doing such a podcast because, I mean, a lot of those things you may not think about. You may just look at it. A lot of people window shop those blinds, you know. I mean, oh, I like the way that one looks good. That one looks nice. And then that's the one they buy because it looks good. And then I have people that, you know, I don't know about the painted one. It just doesn't look as good as the camo print. So they'll pay extra $200 more just to have the camo print because of the camo. It looks good to them, even though the deer don't care. There's no way you're going to hide a 6x6 box stand. I tell you, there is no way. So, I mean, the deer are going to know. If they know you walk in their bed area, what in the world do you think they're going to think when the 6x6 box shows up? They're going to know it's there. It takes them a minute. They finally realize it's not, you know, it's stationary. It's not a threat. And then they go on with their life. But I mean, it's just comical sometimes to hear all the different things that I get told when about the blinds, you know, that color, I don't know. That's just not the right color. I was like, okay.
Yeah, most of my blinds now are kind of a tan brown. That's kind of the color I'm going for, and actually do a little sky white in there. So those are kind of the color combinations that I go for that seem to replicate kind of that environment that I'm creating with some shapes. And you know, it doesn't have to be perfect, and you know, I'm spray painting that on. And you know, one of the other things that I really like is when you're setting up the blinds, when you have these kind of adjustable bases, like you talked about the 4x4s putting in the post, is, you know, you get to adjust the height of those. And so you could match, you know, the window height with the related vegetation. So like if you have miscanthus grass, right, you open up the window and it's just on the tippy, you know, just as the bottom of that window kind of reaches out. So it kind of conceals the blind. The other thing I tell you I did, and I'm upset that I did this years ago, is they've got that two-way, you know, glass or plastic coating that they put. It's basically stickering. So you can see out, but they can't see in. Now that's not completely true, but when you have like foggy days or dark days, I mean, those really kill you. I'd rather done, you know, half of the window, you know, the lower half, you know, potentially. And I've got those elongated, you know, long windows, which are for bow hunting. And by the way, you know, those are painful a lot of times because you don't have the visual. I mean, the other thing that, and I'll get back to that little see-through thing in a second. The other thing is, like, think of your gaps between the windows. Like, if you have major gaps between your windows and you're bow hunting and you're trying to get a good visual, that's why those 360 blinds are just tremendous in that sense, is you're not, there's no gaps. I mean, the gaps are so limited. I mean, you're really getting 360 visual, where some of these, you know, thin, which are hard to shoot out of, by the way, particularly with a bow, you know, elongated windows, you know, they're really difficult to kind of pinpoint deer movement from window to window. And, you know, just something where you have to sit back farther than the blind, just to observe movement. That's not something you want to get into. So I think pay attention to that window configuration. And I would say that is just as important as anything else. It's just, you know, the visual. And I think a lot of people have a hard time transitioning from a hang on stand or, you know, a ladder stand to one of these box lines just because of the visual change.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is a different view. You got blind spots and stuff where normally you wouldn't. But it also, I mean, it's just the comfort. Yeah. It's hard for me to get back out in a lock-on. I mean, I'll hunt them in Nebraska when we go up there. I mean, we'll hunt lock-ons, we'll hunt blinds and tents and whatever. And I know you can, like you said, you can use your food plot planning techniques and different screening and all that to help conceal your blind, especially when you got, you know, new deer during the rut and stuff that, but they're so focused on the does. I don't know. You can probably get away with anything, but it's a preference, man. It really is. I see a lot of people that don't like the different colors, and then they do like things that other people can't stand. And then people want the big windows, and then people say, well, I don't want, that's too much sunlight. You know, I want little windows. And I'm just like, so, I mean, I hear it all trying to build them, you know. You get everybody, and 95% of our season out here is with a rifle. So, you know, most of these are all being built to rifle hunt out of or crossbow hunt, you know, but it's just, you know, different strokes for different folks is what I always say.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that whole configuration, window size, I mean, that is contingent on the time, you know, if, you know, our bow seasons, you know, initially our bow seasons are relatively long. Some people have even longer bow seasons than we do. And then we have gun season, but you know, I'm trying to capitalize in bow season. So I'm going to pick a box blind that's more preferential to that versus, you know, something that's gun oriented. Now I could have a gun stand and that's going to have a slightly different window configuration potentially. And setup's different. One thing that drives me nuts about those grizzly blinds, although I love them, they're super rigid. They weigh a little bit more. I do like the fact with those blinds that you can put, it is set up for my fork, so I can pull my forks right in, and it's easy to elevate and level, et cetera. But that blind has to be completely level, or the door won't shut correctly. But anyhow, the window configuration on the entrance side is those perfect bow shooting windows. And I'm like, why didn't they just rotate that around to the other side? I've got a horizontal window and two, you know, vertical windows where I want really like three vertical windows. And so anyhow, and the, you know, the width is something to pay attention. You know, the wider usually the better in those scenarios. Again, it's just these little things that I notice. I just haven't found a box blind to me that I feel like meets all my demands, because again, I'm not big on the smart side. I'm not opposed to it. I just, you know, I feel like from a permeability standpoint, just my experience with literally rolling a blind down the hill, I've been, you know, and I want light. I want light and portable. Your other thing you brought up earlier, I just want to mention this, is you talked about a blind getting blown over in anchoring systems. I'm interested to hear what you do to anchor your blinds, because I think that's an important topic, especially with all the extreme weather we've had recently.
So we basically make sure that if our footprint up top is 6 foot, I want my footprint on the ground to be 8 foot. So everything's flared out a foot every direction. So it becomes more like a pyramid type design, you know, where you got a wider footprint down low. And then I'll usually drive stakes, treated stakes, and all my posts in the bottom. And then, you know, you can buy those earth anchors. People buy those. There's different ways. I mean, what we have done And, you know, we're just rednecks out here anchoring stuff. So the ones that blew over were not anchored like what we do. But we've had them withstand a lot of storms. But we'll drive a T-post from, you can go to Tractor Supply, buy a green T-post, drive that dude down. And, I mean, it takes, it'll flip a tractor trying to pull one up, you know. So we'll ratchet strap that to a big eye bolt in the top, you know, and ratchet that blind straight to the ground. And usually those withstand, I mean, just about everything. I mean, we've had a lot of storms, like, I mean, a lot of tornadoes come really close to just wiping out farms. And it's amazing to see that some of the blinds make it, and then the ones that don't, you'd think would have, you know, we didn't have them anchored like that. So ever since we started doing the T-post, you're pretty much guaranteed they're not going to blow over. Now, if we had one guy that kind of limp-wristed it and didn't drive his T-post in deep enough, and we did have one of those blow over on those storms this year, actually, and it just bent the T-post, and it just blew it to the side. So, but he had straight legs. So I really feel like, you know, the flared legs and the T-post together, and then we also drive in the stakes just like you would stake a brace or something, you know. But that in itself, and then the stairway, you know, it acts as a brace, and if, you know, we'll stake down our stairway too. So all that kind of helps itself, but that's the redneck way we do it. I don't normally go buy the anchors and stuff, but I have clients that do.
Yeah. And I've done the anchors as well. And I've had a bunch of different options. Actually, what I found worked well for me was I got a plethora of concrete form stakes, and they're 3-footers, and, you know, I punch them in the ground and I zip them to my 4x4 brackets. And typically I run skids. So all my box blinds are on skids, so I can skid them around. And then I use those skids as levelers, you know, so I can tuck in. You know, I try to start on level ground, right? That would be ideal. And if it's not level, I try to level it with my bucket. And then, you know, from that, you know, Josh just recently worked on a client job. And, you know, we talked about the different ways, and he's got his own way and I got my own way, and we're communicating and what's the best. But I like those skids to be a resource for me. If the ground's not completely level, I can, you know, put a shim underneath there and then apply my anchor, you know, somewhere around that, where that, you know, those, the skid and the 4x4 legs kind of meet. And that seemed to work well. But, you know, my blinds aren't really over 8 feet tall, at least to the bottom of the platform. That's about as high as I'm going to go with most of my blinds. They're relatively low in my area. So I think a lot of it depends on your elevation. You know, I've seen people tie them to trees. I think that's a bad idea. The tree kind of like weighs. I mean, I've seen all sorts of things that don't make sense. I also, you know, don't like, I don't know. It depends on, you know, you open up an area and you get some wind throw. And I've had, you know, trees fall in box blinds. I don't know if you've had that happen, but I've had that happen with clients. And it's pretty devastating to these polyethylene blinds. They don't usually last a few thousand, 3,000, 4,000 pound tree landing on its hood, basically. So, you know, it's thinking about some of the overstory trees that are around your area. And I also find, you know, people are putting, you know, these massive structures within woodlots, and, you know, you're susceptible to a lot of deadfall, you know, particularly ash trees in our area. So just pay attention to the trees and the health of the trees where you're putting these blinds, because I think that's a important thing to consider, because they're not all going in fields, you know, and some people are putting them in wood areas or wooded areas, et cetera. So just something to consider. All right. Anything else from you? Anything that's on your mind? Anything else you're thinking about?
No, I mean, the only thing I could touch on real quick is that when we try to level our blinds, we'll take about a foot up off from the bottom of the 4x4s. We'll wrap a 2x4 all the way around, you know, that are 8 foot. So that kind of sets our spread and that keeps the spread at 8 foot. But the reason we go a foot off the ground is if the terrain has less than a foot of change, then we just take a chainsaw and basically raise up, and when it reads level, measure how much it is and chainsaw it off the other one and drop it down. And it all ends up being, you know, we run us all so much. I mean, it's not a big deal to couple cuts and you drop your blind 2 or 3 inches and then it's dead level. So yeah. That's kind of how we, and you can cut it, you know, pitched with the ground and it just sits on the ground perfect. So,
yep.
You know, and that's how we do a little quick leveling on ours.
Yeah, you sound like my partner, because that's exactly how he does it. And, you know, we have our, again, everybody has their own thing, but I think it is important to anchor your blind. I think that's level ground, anchored blind. It's comfortable within the stand, and you're going to feel a little safer when you have that windstorm come through, or at least, you know, hopefully it sustains, you know, heavy winds. But, you know, again, tornadoes, they're hard to combat when you're setting these things up. So, you know, everyone's dealing with different weather conditions. All right, Rocky, that's good. I mean, I'm happy we got to talk about a bunch of things today. I think, you know, we didn't get into all the setups, but I think we talked about, you know, the different options for folks. And, you know, just wondering, Rocky, what do you sell your box blinds for? I think people kind of want to know.
So the 4x5s are more of like a 2-man. You can't, I mean, they're not as big as 6x6, obviously. So those, I am selling them for a painted one. It's just like a flat, like a, the metal's just a one uniform color, and then I paint limbs or whatever on it. Those are $1,300, and for $1,500, I do the camo metal. And then, and I think it's like a mossy oak pattern or something, a real tree. Yeah. And then the 6x6 blinds are painted $1,700, and the camo is $2,000. And that's out the door. That's me scent proofing them. Basically, I rubberize any kind of wood with that flex seal paint. Anything that's on the exterior, I flex seal it all. And then I put gaskets on all the windows and door. So it basically, when you close that dude up, it's pretty airtight. I have thought about setting off a couple smoke bombs inside one and video and see if the smoke comes out. I mean, I know it'll be pretty airtight. So,
I think that would get you another couple million views if you do that.
Yeah. Well, I know pulling up a Amish wrecked blind, it got me 2.5 million or something. I don't know. Yeah. That thing's going crazy, but anyway, yeah, that's about it. I mean, that's how we roll right now. We put skids on them sometimes, you know, the same way so people can pull them in the woods. And I had, you know, clients that hired me to do that. So we did like what you're talking about. We brought concrete blocks, you know, and we just blocked it up, blocked under the skid until it was right, and then he's going to anchor it. So,
yeah, you
know, that's the way we do the skid ones.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked on another podcast, Perry and I, and you know, Perry, and we talked on that podcast about, you know, different options for making your blinds more portable. So if anybody hasn't listened to that, go back and listen to that one, what the juries use, what I've used with clients, you know, basic running gear, cutting things down. I mean, there's a lot of different options for people. If you want some blinds portable, like you only have one blind, right? And you want to move it from location to location in the field. You know, put it on some running gears, you know, old trailer, you know, with a couple stabilizers on it. I mean, there's a lot of options for you that are, you know, make this thing a little more palatable. I don't like these fixed stands. I'm not saying they're not good. I just want to kind of mirror the height of the stand to the related vegetation. And I think that's kind of an ideal scenario. But I like, you know, I do understand people want the easy walk up, you know, with the graded, you know, the graded steps, and they want that, you know, nice handle and, you know, kind of last step before they get into the box. And those are, you know, you can create those out of wood as well. You know, everyone, again, each their own, what's more comfortable. If you got any ailments, you know, it's hard for you to walk up certain stairs, steps, et cetera. You know, I think, you know, you just build it accordingly, but I think it's important to think about, you know, where we're putting these, how we're camouflaging them, you know, their location on the landscape, and not creating too much intrusion. And, you know, where my area is, we're not just putting them out in the middle of fields. You can't get away with that stuff in our particular area. And just the amount of scent that surrounds them, I think that's important, you know, that you brought up earlier. So I think those are some added topics beyond, you know, what brand to pick, et cetera. So, all right, man, I think that's a good podcast. And, I can't wait to hear about this big buck you're going to kill here in just a few days. So I think we'll probably check back within you after you got blood on your hands. How's that sound?
Well, that sounds good. Hopefully you didn't just jinx me.
I know. All right, man. Thanks for taking the time with me tonight, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, man. God bless. See you.
All right, you too. See you, bud. Bye.
Maximize Your Hunt is a production of Whitetail Landscapes. For more information on how John Teeter and his team of experts can help you maximize your hunt, check out whitetaillandscapes.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.